Brothers and sisters, this morning our subject will be the 7th chapter of Daniel. And I'm going to confess to you a small amount of angst about this subject because I feel like the audience, you know, knows a great deal more than I do and has had a lot of experience. So as we go through this, we will say that we've appreciated the collective amount of help on this subject over the years that we've received from everyone else in our studies on this particular subject. The 7th chapter of Daniel is a very important prophecy, as all of everything we read in Daniel is very important. And it's already been mentioned this week that there's a great relationship between chapter 7 and chapter 2 of Daniel. And we would preface our remarks as we get into Daniel 7 that it's important that we've made sure that our understanding of Daniel chapter 2 is accurate. And we had some good classes on Daniel chapter 2. Because if we don't understand Daniel chapter 2, we're not going to understand the prophetic word properly. Daniel chapter 2, in my mind, is in very much every way a crucial building block upon the rest of the prophetic word is built upon. And of course, there is a great deal of relationship between chapter 2 and chapter 7. They are very much intertwined, as we know. In Daniel chapter 7, in the first 14 verses, we have a vision that was seen at night, and Daniel records it in these first 14 verses. Verse 15 and 16, there is a short remark in which we will start with this morning, in which Daniel writes for us in verses 15 and 16, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit, in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. Now, we wanted to start with a short discussion of these verses before we get into the subject itself, because we think Daniel has set forth a crucial example for us in his actions that we must follow when we study the Word. He received a vision, one that he did not completely understand accurately, and he sought help to understand that vision. And he sought help by going to one of the angels that were nearby. And I think that's an excellent example for us, because I think it's very important that in all of our studies we make sure that we are seeking help in prayer. Our study should be prayerful study. Daniel received his vision directly from the Lord. We receive the message through the written word. And I think it's crucial that we follow Daniel's example and make sure that we seek help from he who is able to best help us in the study of the Word. We know in James, in the first chapter, there are some well-known recorded words for us in James chapter 1, verses 5 and 6, and we'll turn to that here as we begin. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. The words of James are there important to us. We need to, in prayer, be constantly going to our Heavenly Father, requesting wisdom when we study His Word. And I think we see that in Daniel here. He goes to the angel in his vision, Yahweh's representative, and asks for help in complete understanding. Rotherham has for in verse 16, where the King James reads, he asked him the truth of all of this. Rotherham writes, he asked the truth. In other words, he made exact inquiry of what he had seen. And I think the implication is because of what Daniel has already learned many years before when he was given the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's image, he had a general understanding of the outline of prophecy in the ages. And so now he's asking for exact knowledge, exact inquiry of what is taking place so that he could completely understand. We might see an echo, if you will, to what the Apocalypse tells us in that, to the Revelation chapter 1 and verse 3. Blessed is he that readeth and understand and keepeth that exact knowledge of the words of this book. We know then that after Daniel asked for help in verses 17 onward through verse 27, he is given additional knowledge about what he had seen that would help him in his understanding of what he had seen. And we know from the 28th verse that he then did understand, because the understanding caused him a grief of mind. It caused him a grief of mind because once he understood, he knew that the kingdom of God was further off than he had hoped. The ending of Jeremiah's 70 years of captivity would not bring about the kingdom of Yahweh upon earth. And he understood that from this vision, we would suggest. And so therefore, his cognition was troubling him. His countenance was somewhat grieved. He had hoped, as all saints have hoped through the ages, that the kingdom of God was much closer than it is. So we need to seek for that exact knowledge. And I would say finally, on a particular subject, as we follow Daniel's example, as Daniel at times relied on his friends, we must also do that as well. So as we go through any study, let's make sure we seek wisdom from our Heavenly Father and seek the collective wisdom that we can gain from our brothers and sisters in any study. You know, I think that there are times where I'm not sure how to say this, but it's something that I kind of wanted to mention. I will say this. There are times where I have really delved into a particular subject and dedicated, you know, lots of time to a particular study and still not been able to understand something. And then, you know, maybe go talk to another brother or even a sister about the particular subject, and all of a sudden the light bulb goes on. And sometimes it's over something that I hit myself up the side of the head and go, you know, I really could have got that myself. The answer was easy. And I think that what happens in those times for me is I walk away with an exhortation to myself that maybe the reason it's that way is because Yahweh doesn't want me to get it all on my own. We need to learn to depend upon one another as well. And let's make sure we are depending upon one another. Alright, let's back up then in Daniel 7 and let's return to the first verse of the chapter. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. We'll pause there. We're told that it's in the first year of Belshazzar that Daniel received this vision. Now, an exposition of Daniel, which I meant to mention this, while I was talking about looking for help from our brethren, I thought that was an appropriate time that I was going to mention. The sources that we have looked to for this study have certainly been the works of Brother Thomas, as I think we have all relied upon. Exposition of Daniel, Elpis Israel, and Eureka. Also in my study, I used, of course, the Expositor series on Daniel and Brother H.P. Mansfield's notes as well. Okay. Brother Thomas, then, in Exposition of Daniel on page 10 of my edition, says that the first year of Belshazzar was 19 years prior to Cyrus's overthrow of Belshazzar. He places then chapter 7 in 561 B.C. All right. Some other commentators suggest this is actually 553. Okay. And I don't know about history enough to know exactly who's right, but they're both in the general area. Brother Thomas puts this at 561. In the Expositor, they suggest that that would put Daniel at this point in time in his life at chapter 7 at age 67. That's their suggestion. All right. And their suggestion is, I think, based on the 553 date. If we look to the 561 date, we would see 8 years difference, and we still see that Daniel is not a young man, as Brother Richard was speaking to us yesterday. He started off as a very young man when he was taught of Yahweh, and now here he is approaching the mature years of his life, and even further, and Yahweh is still teaching him. And that in itself is an exhortation to us, and particularly to you young Bible students who are sitting in class with us today. Okay? I think it's very important with subjects like these that we never become discouraged if we do not get it all right away. Because Yahweh is going to teach us throughout our whole life. We will be ever learning His Word. Alright? And we see that with Daniel. He didn't get all of these visions at once. He got them at points in time in his life, and the Lord gave him time to mull it over, to think about those things, to, you know, strengthen his understanding, his resolve before more was revealed to him. Well, this particular vision in the second verse of chapter 7, we are told, came to him in a vision by night. A vision by night. And this is something that we find very appropriate and interesting, because the things that were being revealed to Daniel were the things that belonged to the Gentile night. So he received the vision by night. This in itself is an indication to us as Bible students that what we are dealing with in this particular chapter relate to the things of the times of the Gentiles, if you will. Alright? Let's look at two references in regard to that. The first one will be John chapter 9, verses 4 and 5. John chapter 9, verses 4 and 5. The words of Yeshua, he says, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. And certainly in the midst of this darkness that the Lord came about in, while he was present, it was as if it was day. He was the great light of the world. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. In Isaiah chapter 60, we want to read the first three verses and see how that Isaiah teaches us that the time prior to Yeshua's return is a time of darkness. So we have Daniel seeing these visions in the night. They relate to the times of Gentile darkness, the night, and Isaiah speaks of that darkness. Verse 1 of chapter 60, Isaiah. Arise, shine, for the light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people. But Yahweh shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to thy brightness, to the brightness of thy rising. The implication that Isaiah is giving to us here is the reason why the return of the Lord is as a bright light of glory is because of the great darkness that has existed prior. The Gentile night is a time of darkness. So we would suggest then that Daniel's vision relates to the times of the Gentiles, to the times of the Gentile night. And during this time, he saw then that the four winds of heaven strove upon the great sea. Now, when we think of the winds of heaven and striving upon the great sea of these winds of heaven, the implication that we're given here is the idea of armies at war. So Daniel is given to understand then that the great things that he is about to see are things that are going to be involved in the warfares and the working out of Yahweh's plans through the wars of these Gentiles as well, through their conquest, through these four beasts coming forth to go forth to conquer, to stamp and devour the earth, as it were. Jeremiah chapter 4, we want to read verses 11 through 13 there. Jeremiah 4, 11 through 13. At that time shall it be said to this people and to Jerusalem, a dry wind of the high places into the wilderness toward the daughter of my people, not to fan nor to cleanse. Even a full wind from those places shall come unto me. Now also will I give sentence against them. Behold, he shall come up as clouds, and his chariots shall be as a whirlwind. His horses are swifter than eagles. Woe unto us, for we are spoiled. Here we see these metaphors that are being used, the wind that comes up to bring these judgments in this warfare. So the four winds driving up, striving upon the great sea are an indication of great turmoil that would bring about these events. In Zechariah chapter 6, and in the fifth verse, we have another reference that would help us in this understanding. Alright? Zechariah 6 and verse 5. And those of you that have the Oxford version of the King James Bible, I want you to look at the marginal note in there for spirits. And then you'll see the help that this verse gives us. Zechariah 6, 5. And the angel answered and said unto me, these are the four winds, which is the marginal note for spirits, the four winds of the heaven, which go forth from the standing before Yahweh of all the earth. All right, so we see once again the idea of judgments, warfare, that go forth as winds, and they are striving upon the great sea. Another reference, which we won't turn to, that you might want to put in your notes, that also helps us in this concept, is the Apocalypse chapter 7 and the first verse. So the four winds then strive upon the great sea. And the great sea, we know scripturally, is the Mediterranean Sea. Numbers chapter 34 and verse 6 would confirm this for us. I'm not going to turn to that reference. Many of you probably already have it in your notes. Numbers 34, 6. But this is also an important comment for us, as it has already been mentioned for us to us several times, that the Apocalypse is the book unsealed, and Daniel is that book that was sealed. We have for us something that we will see unsealed later on. The four winds strive upon the great sea, and John saw a great beast, which was a composite of these beasts, which was described as the beast of the sea in Revelation 13 and verse 1. So there is something for us to make note of in our, as we move forward in our talks. And I make note of that now because I really don't know how much of that I'm going to get to. All right? So file that away. If we get to it, we will. If we don't have time, we won't. There's an additional reference in Isaiah which I'd like to think about here as well, though. When we think that in this vision that is these four winds upon the great sea that bring about these events, Isaiah also has a very important reference to us. We've already mentioned that this is a vision of the night, It relates to the Gentile times. In Isaiah 57, in verse 20, we have a very familiar reference to us. And I think that we can connect this event or this verse to what is taking place for us. Isaiah 57, verse 20, the wicked are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, saith my God, to the wicked. The exhortation of Isaiah then tied in here indicates to me that Yahweh is using man's wickedness to help bring about his purpose. The reason why the waters strove upon the great sea is because the great sea was wicked. And Yahweh uses man's evil desires and the rulers of men to bring about his purpose. And these beasts all come forth out of that wicked sea of nations, if you will. And how so is important to us. It brings to us a reminder of the Lord's work. Okay, let's then start to discuss these four beasts that came forth. This slide you might notice. I got it from Brother David, so we'll give credit that some of the slides that I'm going to show came forth from Brother David, which he got from Brother Chris Sales. So we passed some information around. The four beasts that are shown, as has been made mention before, have a direct correlation to Daniel chapter 2, and we want to keep that in mind because we're going to make frequent reference, well, occasional reference back to Daniel 2, depending upon time. We saw a lion, the head of gold, bear, breast and arms of silver, the leopard, the brazen belly and thighs, and then the fourth beast. There's also a chart here that you've seen often that has been used to show this correlation as well, and all of you have seen this chart on Christadelphian teaching as it has been since 1848, which shows this correlation between the image, the beast, and with the fourth beast to the beast of the apocalypse, which I think most of us know that, but for the young people that are sitting in with the class for us, we want you to understand that the importance of this chapter in for your future studies, that what we have here for us in Daniel's fourth beast, when we get to that, is going to be seen in the apocalypse in chapter 12, in chapter 13, and in chapter 17, okay? So it all ties in together. If we don't understand this study, there's going to be an awful lot of other scriptures that we cannot properly set in their correct place. And that's the problem that we see in our community today, is we start off with a faulty principle from Daniel chapter 2, and we end up with a skewed understanding all the way down the line. So I'll make sure that you at least file some of this away, that what we're talking about here in Daniel chapter 7 has a relationship to the dragon of chapter 12. That beast there that also has 10 horns. Okay, we won't talk about the heads right now. It has a relationship to the beast of the sea in chapter 13 of the apocalypse, which also was a beast that had 10 horns. It has a relationship also to chapter 17 up here, this part of the chart, which has a beast with 10 horns. So we have a lot of things we need to pay attention to. So let's start then with the lion. And let's discuss that. Some of these, I must have hit the wrong button. Some of these charts that we're going to put up here, we're putting them up here just for reference to you to look at. I don't intend to conduct the class necessarily off that, but there's some good information in some of these charts. You might be able to copy down a verse or two that you might miss if I'm talking too fast. So let's start with the lion. Chapter 7 of Daniel, verse 4, says that the first beast was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked. and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. Well, this particular portion of what Daniel saw, and this is why I suggest to you, when he goes in verse 16 and says, I need to know the truth of all of this, this is why I suggest to you that Daniel was not devoid of understanding of what he was seeing. He just wanted to know exactly what it meant. He was a man of understanding. The Lord had schooled him for a half a century by this point in time, but he desired, out of love of Yahweh's word, to know completely what he was seeing, and additional information was therefore given to him, and that's a characteristic we need to have. Daniel would already know the importance of the lion. Here he was, he had been taken away captivity into Babylon, and what was he seeing in his daily life in Babylon, in their architecture? And we'll look at that in a moment, but he was seeing the lions, a great symbol in their architecture. But he also would know from the testimonies of his fellow prophets what the lion referred to. Now, there's a suggestion in the Expositor series by Brother H.P. Mansfield, that probably the words of Jeremiah would have been on his mind at this time when he saw this vision. Particularly, they suggest Jeremiah 25 would have been something that would have been on his mind at this point in time. So I think a lot of the words of Jeremiah would have been important to him. But a familiar reference that we know of in Jeremiah that helps unlock what is seen here for us is chapter 50. All right? And for you young people, if you don't already have this particular verse in your notes, make sure it's there. Jeremiah chapter 50, the 17th verse, Jeremiah wrote, Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First, the king of Assyria hath devoured him. And last, this Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, hath broken his bones. The lions then that are seen here, one with eagle's wings and one without, relate to Assyria, Babylon. There is a transformation that occurs in this beast. The brother who made this chart listed it as a transformation, not a new beast or new empire, and I think that's very significant. It's still a lion, okay? We have one beast representing one empire. But there was a development within that lion. It started off as a lion with eagle's wings, and then it became a lion that stood upon its feet as a man. So we have a transformation between Assyria and Babylon that takes place here. Now, I'll put up two slides here that are in the Expositor series of Daniel, or similar slides are, okay? The ones I'm going to show are not the ones that I copied out of there. I went on the internet and just typed in Assyrian lion. I wanted to see what I was going to find. And I counsel you young people, if you want to do something like that, make sure a parent's there, because when you start looking at pictures on the internet, you don't know what you're going to find, okay? And it takes care. But this is a picture of a piece of architecture that is in the British Museum of Art. Okay? And this was taken from Assyrian architecture. And this is in the Expedition of Daniel. Brother H.P. has it in there. It is a picture of a tremendous lion with great wings. And look at its head there. It's the head of a man. And I think that was very important. It shows how much that the Assyrians related to this particular animal. It was their standard. All right, the lion. So the eagle's wings was something that on a lion were particular to the Assyrian kingdom. All right. This next picture is taken off the Ishtar Gate in Babylon. All right, or I think that's right. At least that's what the chart said, that I took it off of the website, and Brother H.P. has this in the Expositor series. And this was something that was very common in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, was this lion walking around to devour. That was his standard. It related to his kingdom. So a very appropriate symbol is given to Daniel to understand the Assyrio-Babylonian kingdom. One that has a transforms from the eagle's wings to not having the eagle's wings. Now I think there's something that's kind of a miniature parable here for us that I'd like to suggest to you as well. All right. The Babylonian kingdom, the Assyrian kingdom transformed into the Babylonian kingdom. Okay? One replaced the other in this transformation. And maybe in miniature, we have for us there a type of the last days. For the Assyrian lion, the Assyrian Gogian entity will be dealt with and before the Babylonian portion of the image will be. Okay? It will be dealt with. The lion, the Gogian invader, will be destroyed, and then really we won't see the final complete destruction of that Babylonian entity for another 40 years. Depending on if I think that's 40 years is right. So maybe in type we've got a little bit of an exhortation here that we can look at. I also want to spend a few moments talking about the eagle's wings before we leave the lion. The eagle's wings, the eagle itself, is an interesting animal when we look at it in Scripture and its relationship to Israel. And I think that it's chosen to go along with this lion for a particular reason, because the eagles are constantly associated with Israel through its history. Now let's look at a couple of references here that I've got marked down that I keep notes on. Let's look back first at Deuteronomy chapter 28. Alright? Very familiar reference to many of us. And once again to you young adults. Okay? Deuteronomy 28 is something that you eventually want to study so that you can help unlock many of the prophecies that concern the last days. Deuteronomy 28, Moses, what Daniel sees, Moses saw. Let's just put it that way. Okay? And in Deuteronomy 28, we have some things that relate to the subject here, I suggest. Verse 49. Alright. Yahweh shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. Verse 50, note this. And note it because it's got an echo to Daniel chapter 8, and I'm not going to go too much into that, but just make note of it. A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the persons of old, nor show favor to the young. Now let's look over at Matthew 24, alright, and let's add another reference to our thought here before we give you what our completed thought is. In the Olivet Prophecy, the Lord spoke this. Alright, Matthew 24, 27, 28. For as lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there would the eagles be gathered together. Now, what we read in Deuteronomy 28 and Matthew 24 refers specifically in its first application to the Romans. Alright? And here's the groundwork that I'm laying here that I think is interesting then about this first beast. The eagle is associated with the head of gold then. It's associated with the lion, with the Assyrio-Babylonians. And it stays associated with those Assyrian entities, if you will, throughout their different manifestations through history. The eagle was not only with Assyria and Babylon, but it was a symbol of Rome as well. And there's something about the Olivet Prophecy here that I don't have enough time to go through, or else I won't finish Daniel 7. But I want you to make note of verse 29. 28 tells us that wherever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Verse 29 then says, immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven. Well, let me just give you a Brother Thomas's synopsis of these verses here. Okay? And there's an article in the Herald of the Kingdom and Age to Come, or in the Olivet Prophecy, that Brother Thomas deals with this in detail. When we get to verse 29, in the darkening of the heavens, Brother Thomas tells us that is the Jewish heavens that are darkened. All right? Luke 21 and 24 describes these two verses in a little bit different language. That language is that Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So I guess what I'm suggesting to you, that when we look at how Matthew is saying that the eagles are going to be gathered around this carcass and it'll be associated with it, Luke talks about the eagles being there, if you will, for two millennia. Not just in Rome, but at the end of that trotting down period of Jerusalem being trodden down to the Gentiles till the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled in the latter-day Assyrian, when its political heavens will once again be darkened and its moon not give its light. And then verse 30 of the Olivet Prophecy says that what happens? Let's phrase it this way. Look at verse 30, and I'm just going to say it in this way. At that time shall Michael the great prince stand up and stand for the people. So I think that the symbol, as I think about it, of the eagle's wings is a very important echo for us, because it relates to the Assyrian throughout its several manifestations throughout its history. It starts with the Assyrian-Babylonian kingdom. It's seen in Rome. And it's seen in Rome because ultimately it is that iron power in the time of the end, when the image is complete and all of its parts are put together, that once again becomes that eagle power in the last days, in the form of the Assyrian, Babylonian, Gogian entity as it exists then. Alright, let's move on to the next beast that was seen, the bear. Verse 5 of Daniel 7 tells us, and behold, another beast, a second like to a bear, and it raised itself on one side. And it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. The bear relates, just as Nebuchadnezzar's image did in this succession of world empires, related to the Medo-Persian Empire. It is interesting to make note. It is interesting to make note also that when we speak of Russia, it is often referred to as the Russian bear. This bear had three ribs in its mouth. On this particular chart, this brother chose to write it this way, that when Cyrus came to the throne, he faced opposition in three areas: Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt. And he conquered all of these and reigned supreme. Well, these three ribs then that are in the bear's mouth, we want to relate them to what happens when the bear raised itself up on one side, the Persian side, when it raised itself up. Three ribs in its mouth: Babylon, Egypt, and Lydia. Let's compare for a moment chapter 6 of Daniel to this in the second verse, which says, and over the three provinces of Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, and I misspoke on something just a second ago. I didn't phrase it the way I wanted to, and let me pick that up in just a second. first in Daniel 6, 2, three presidents are shown there. And I would suggest to you where it says that over these three presidents reign. Well, the expositors, they relate this to those three kingdoms that he conquered, Babylon, Egypt, and Lydia. And I just made a remark that the ribs were in, you know, its mouth when the Persians came to power. But let's keep in mind that this bear, it's a Medo-Persian bear. One side was higher than the other, but it's the bear that has the three ribs in its mouth, okay? It was the Medo-Persian Empire. They go in, they take Babylon, and they take its three provinces. So I probably shouldn't have described it the way I did originally. Let's correct ourselves a little bit there. I phrased that differently than I wanted to. Okay, this particular beast then was told to devour much flesh. And this denotes to us that this was a fierce people bent on domination. Let's compare Isaiah chapter 13 to this in verses 16 and 18. Isaiah 13, 16 through 18. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. Their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. In Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. So Isaiah already describes to us the type of people that were going to overthrow the Babylonian kingdom. So we see it as appropriate then that this bear is one that arises and devours much flesh. They were a fierce people that came in and conquered. Let's move on to the next of the beasts that Daniel saw arise out of this great sea. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 6. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. Well, let's focus for a moment then on this particular beast. The leopard was chosen very aptly because the Greek kingdom, which is being described for us here, moved with great speed in its conquest. Its movements were very swift, and its defeats were very stunning. We know that, you know, Alexander, who was the general initially over these Greeks when they completed these conquests, they moved with such speed that he died a young man because he just became bored with what else to do, and he became a drunken sot. You know, and many historians say that he died in a drunken stupor. All right. It was a very swift conflict. The leopard then is a very fitting symbol that is used to describe this conquest. There are some historians that say it was 10 years that Alexander needed to accomplish all of this conquest, which is an extremely short period of time for those times. Okay? For those times. This leopard had four wings of a fowl, and it had four heads. The four wings help us also to denote the swiftness of which this conquering took place. And together with the four heads, with the four wings, it helps us to understand the four divisions in which Alexander's empire was then divided into. let's look for just a moment, and we won't spend much time with this. I'd rather leave time for Brother Darrell to deal with this tomorrow. Let's just take a peek over at chapter 8, verses 8 and verses 22. There's a relationship here, and I thought I'd leave this particular subject for Darrell a little bit more, because I think from our talks he's going to get into it more than I would have time to anyway. All right, Daniel 8, verse 8. Therefore the he-goat waxed great, very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. All right, now let's look over at verse 22, which gives us an understanding of what is seen. All right, I said verse 22, but we want to preface that with 20, 21, 22. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. So Daniel 8 tells us very clearly that the Greek Empire was divided into four kings, and it's denoted here by four horns, and in chapter 7 it's denoted by the four wings of the fowl and by the four heads. And those four divisions of the empire were the king of the south, the king of the northwest, the king of the north, and the king of the west. I'm going to let Darrell get into that a little bit more into the specifics in his particular class. But we should also note that in verse 6 it is talked about that dominion was given unto this leopard. Okay? Dominion was given unto it, and that takes us back to Daniel chapter 2 for just a moment. And it takes us back to the 39th verse of Daniel chapter 2, where we are told there that the third kingdom of brass will bear rule over all the earth. That language is very much likened unto the leopard having dominion given to it. It bear rule over all the earth. Now is when we enter into some extremely critical parts of our subject. We'll leave the leopard and we'll move on to a discussion of the fourth beast. I'm going to have a couple charts up here that are taken from the Grand Structure of the Apocalypse by Brother Bartholomew. Okay? Which, you know, I would suggest to the young people that the Grand Structure of the Apocalypse is a very, very good work to read to help you get a good overview of the apocalypse, okay? And it might help you as you delve in deeper into Eureka and Opus Israel and even the exposition of Daniel. Well, in Daniel chapter 7 then, and in verse 7, you know what I think we might do, since I got a couple minutes head start? I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to read through these verses, and then we're going to break, and we'll take 15 minutes for our first break. And because I don't want to interrupt my thoughts on the fourth beast. I'd rather start the second class there. Well, let's just start and have this in our minds. Daniel 7:7. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were the eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. All right, why don't we pause there? Let's take 15 minutes, and we'll start at 10 o'clock.